David Cobb is a college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports, also a role player here at 92.9 ESPN Thursdays with Jeffrey Wright and company, and then Monday, Wednesday, Friday right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. David, how's it going? Happy Friday.
What's up, man? It's going all right. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Can't complain. I want to hop right into it. SEC media poll was published today, and no surprise in the top four: Texas, Georgia, Alabama, LSU. I don't blame anybody for having any particular order with that. 44 first place votes for Georgia, 96 for Texas, 29 for Alabama, 20 for LSU. But then after that, it's kind of a crapshoot. South Carolina, Florida, Ole Miss, A&M, Tennessee, Oklahoma round out the top 10. Do you have any issues? Anybody should be higher? Anybody should be lower? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, so I have not been like digesting the public perception or the public reaction to this poll. But if I had to guess, I would imagine there's probably some Tennessee fans out there saying, well, hold on a second. We just made the college football playoff. Why are we – where's Tennessee, 8, 9 in this poll?
Yep, 9.
You know, so it's – yeah, right. So there's probably some Tennessee fans out there thinking, man, we're kind of low in this thing. But honestly, like, I get it. Like, Tennessee's got a lot to replace. They're a young team. There's a really good story up over at GoVols 24/7 right now by Patrick Brown, who's been covering the team for 15 years. And he really lays out just sort of the reality of – the youth on this Tennessee football team. And so I don't think people really understand how young they are and how this like isn't really the target year. Now, I'm not saying Tennessee's tanking. I'm not saying Tennessee's going to be bad, but I'm just saying Tennessee is probably not in a, hey, we're going to make the playoff type of mode right now. And that's maybe a difficult thing for people to grapple with, but it's the reality. And so, you know, if anything jumps out to you when you look at the preseason poll, it's Tennessee at 9, right? Because, hey, we made the playoff. Well, like, what are we doing down there? And I get that. But, you know, I think that's probably a fair assessment of kind of where the program is at this year in particular. I don't think they're cooked under Josh Heupel. I just think it's a rebuild right now for 2025. That's kind of what it is. And not a 5-7 or 6-6 type of rebuild, but, hey, this might be a more of an 8 or a 9-win team.
Yeah, Joey Aguilar, do you think he could be better than we expect, though? I mean, he solid career at App State. I know it's a way easier way there in the Sun Belt. I completely understand that. But solid quarterback, and with a guy who's known for coaching up quarterbacks and getting the most out of them in Josh Heupel.
Yeah, so the problem with Joey Aguilar is you go and look at what he did last year at App State, and, oh, man, there were a lot of interceptions. Like, obviously, turning the ball over was a real problem for him last year. So that's the issue. But if you go back to 23, my man was one of the absolute best quarterbacks in the group of five. Honestly, he probably missed his window to transfer after 23. If he transferred after 23 – we're talking about Joey Aguilar in a lot of different terms, you know, going into his tenure as a Power 5 starting quarterback. Well, I mean, last year kind of tainted the perception of him a little bit. So who is he? Is he 2023 Joey Aguilar or is he 2024 Joey Aguilar? And I think part of the problem with why I'm not super high on him is because what's around him. You're talking about potentially starting a redshirt freshman and a true freshman on the offensive line. And you've got the numbers in this story that Patrick Brown did on the wide receivers are shocking when you talk about Tennessee's receiver core, because it is basically 5 or 6 former walk-ons, 5 or 6 guys who have never caught a pass in college football, and you've got 3 guys who are semi-proven, if that, at the college level in that receiving core. And so, I mean, if we had Joey Aguilar surrounded by Jalen Hyatt and Dylan Sampson and a top half of the SEC offensive line, yeah, man, I think he could be really, really good. I don't think that's what he's surrounded by, though. And so for those reasons, I think this is a Tennessee team that's going to be anchored again by the defense. And I do believe that their defense is going to be pretty salty. Yeah, obviously, you lose James Pierce Jr., Jermaid McCoy's coming back from injury at corner, but still, even with some of those issues, I think they're going to be pretty, pretty salty on defense again.
Now, Florida right outside sort of that top five there. At number 6, they got 2 first-place votes. I don't really pay attention to that because Vanderbilt, it's like a rite of passage. Vanderbilt, they had 2 first-place votes as well. But Florida and their schedule, it feels like maybe the voters voted on what they think Florida can be, and maybe the DJ Lagway tax had to play into this. But it feels like people kind of ignored the schedule, right, putting them at 6. Because they could be a good team. They could be the 6th best team in the SEC, right? They could be, But at the same time, I don't know if that's going to equal wins considering the schedule they have, just like last year.
Spot on. So if I were voting, I would have had Missouri ahead of Florida. Gabe, do I think Missouri,
and Mizzou is 12th, by the
Florida?
Way.
Right, right. They're going to finish higher than 12th, and Florida will probably finish lower than 6th. Do I think Missouri is better than Florida? No, I do not. I would have voted Missouri ahead of Florida, though, because of the schedule. And I don't have it out in front of me. I can't tell you if or when they play head-to-head off the top of my head. But if they play, I would pick Florida to win the game. But when push comes to shove in the final standings, I mean, I would imagine they're going to be on equal ground. And you could potentially even have Missouri ahead of Florida because their schedule is just that light. Florida's schedule is just that tough. And that's a huge issue in college football right now. I mean, imbalanced scheduling is a real, real problem. And so that's why I agree with this idea that we're seeing put out there by a lot of coaches about how there needs to be some sort of metric or baseline for how we evaluate scheduling. Like, you've been a proponent of the quad system, sort of like what we do in college basketball. I've written about that in the past. I don't know if that's the answer, but there needs to be some sort of accounting for the variation in schedules that we see.
Should we be higher on Ole Miss than we are? Not, they have middle of the pack schedule. They're at 7 in this poll. I know that Jackson Dart's no longer there. You don't have Trey Harris. You lost some talent to the NFL draft this year. But you know, yeah. I the Austin Simmons thing is intriguing to me. And I know, like, all I really have to go off is that. You know, either garbage time or that one unbelievable drive he had against Georgia in that win that Ole Miss had last year. But I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't believe in the Austin Simmons Lane Kiffin marriage. I feel like that has the potential to be one of the best in the SEC.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a great quarterback's coach, and the little we've seen of Austin Simmons, very encouraging. I would put Ole Miss like as tier 1A in the mystery teams category in the SEC. Other mystery teams, Texas A&M. Is Marcel Reed the second coming of Johnny Manziel, or did he merely win the job because Connor Wegman stunk? You know, like there's a huge variation there that makes Texas A&M a mystery team in year two under Mike Elko. So I'd have them in that category along with Ole Miss. And then, I mean, we talk about Missouri. I think you could put Missouri and South Carolina in that category as well because both teams – have a handful of really good players coming back, but they also have a lot of unknowns. I mean, yeah, both teams were hit by the portal. Both teams went heavy in the portal. So I kind of look at A&M, South Carolina, Missouri, Ole Miss. Is it conceivable that one of those teams can make the playoff? Yeah, absolutely. I also think it's within the realm of possibility that one or two of those teams are scrapping to make a bowl in November. So that's sort of my mystery tier from the SEC. Because there's just a lot of unknowns there with those programs, and the highs could be really high, the lows could be really low. There's just more variation there with those squads, and Ole Miss is absolutely a part of that conversation.
Now, the All-SEC team was published, and first, second, and third team quarterback took me by surprise to a certain extent. I'd put it in a different order, but I guess I don't mind the names. Lenore Sellers gets the nod for first team. Second team, Garrett Nussmeier. Third team, Arch Manning. I'm glad cooler heads prevailed. When it came to Arch Manning, not everybody believes in him like Paul Feinbaum does. But Lenore Sellers, first team. I need to see him not default to running as much as he did a year ago. Now, that ended in big plays. I watched the Clemson game. I saw how that ended up, and I saw what he was able to do. But there's still something missing that I have to see before I give him this type of nod. But it felt like the media voted on it this way, and this is how it ends up.
Yo, have you had a chance to play with South Carolina on PSE 26
yet? Not yet. He's probably
Nick
a cheat code
on that game. Well, Sellers is great, and then Nick Harbor on the perimeter at, what is he, 6'4"? And he's like a 98 speed on the game. If the CFB 26 version of Nick Harbor is the real version of Nick Harbor, then yeah, I can see Lenore Sellers throwing for 3,500 yards because he's just he's that good, right? So it's part of like what you have around you, obviously. But Lenore Sellers is also the type of player that can compensate for the deficiencies, right? Like you talk about the Joey Aguilar. I'm not saying he's a statue back there, that he's immobile by any stretch, but the thing that makes a guy like Lenore Sellers or Diego Pavia or Taylen Green at Arkansas different is they can escape. They can make plays with their legs. With that comes a lot of risk as well, because obviously you take 25 or 30 hits over the course of the game. That's tough. So it's I don't know. Like that's kind of my question. With I will say when the all SEC teams came out today, I was a little surprised that like Pavia was not on there. I mean, this is kind of like the rock star of the SEC right now. This guy led Vanderbilt to a win over Alabama. Literally has a court ruling that's going to go down in history with his name. I kind of felt like that was a snub, and it's not like Diego Pavia needs any more motivation or fuel on the fire, but if he did, boy, he probably got it today.
I feel like Diego Pavia is more of like a – I'm not saying they're poking fun at him with all the hype he gets. He does sort of say some outlandish things, about Vandy and how they're destined for greatness because they're in the city of Nashville. Said that on Bussin' with the Boys not too long ago. But I feel like the character Diego Pavia in everybody's mind outweighs actually what he does on a football field. And I'm not taking anything away from him, but that's just seems to I was not surprised at all. Wow. I feel like people have latched on to the persona more than the actual football player.
Well, Gabe, Diego Pavia is going to clip that and play it every morning and use what you just said as motivation. I kind of think he's talked too much. I think he's put a target on Vanderbilt's back, and he's just being who he is, and it's not necessarily – like, it's great to have an authentic character, an authentic SEC quarterback who fans feel like they know and can connect with and who has a personality and is brash and sort of – with his bravado and everything. Like, I think that's great. Like, I love that. But you're at Vanderbilt, man. Like, it's going to be tough to back right. that up because you were just sort of – you were a sweet surprise last
You
year,
surprised nobody, Bama. I don't know if you just beat – it's definitely – there's some flukiness to that. I don't care.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, that's what it was.
Anybody this year. Like, you're not surprising anyone this year. And that's where I get a little worried with the Vanderbilt hype. And I'll say this, too. Like, there's this narrative right now – over the debate with the SEC sticking at an 8-game conference schedule while the Big Ten plays a 9-game conference schedule. And it's emerged as this huge sticking point in whether or not we're going to expand the playoff. How is expansion going to go down? Are we going to have, a certain number of automatic bids for certain conferences? And, this is a huge debate right now. And there's this idea that, well, even the bottom of the SEC is really, really, really solid and tough. And there's no easy wins. And, you go look at the Big Ten and Purdue's so bad and Northwestern is so bad and blah, 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 blah. And like, yeah, I mean, last year that was pretty much the case. But I'm not convinced, man. Like, Mississippi State is going to be pretty bad. Like, they're going to be better than they were last year. Kentucky's going to be pretty bad. I don't think they're going to make a bowl. Not to mention, like, is Arkansas going to make a bowl? Is Vanderbilt going to be able to repeat what they did last year? Like, I think there's a decent chance, like, that bottom quadrant of the SEC – it's going to be pretty bad, in which case their argument, kind of the bottom of their argument, falls out with, hey, well, every game in the SEC is a knockdown, dragout sort of fight. And, like, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree, but I think we're maybe overinflating the bottom of that league a little bit.
Well, we lift up the games and the metrics that we want to, and then we ignore certain other things. Like last year, for example, Mississippi State plays a really close game with Arizona State. Right, it was 30-23.
Yeah,
very close game early in the season. I think it was before Arizona State had peaked, like it became Arizona State. But then also on the back end, you saw Arizona State give Texas everything they could possibly handle. And if it weren't for a missed targeting call, Arizona State probably wins that game. So I think it sways both ways, right? Like It's hard to say. I sort of echo your opinion. I do think the mid to bottom tier teams in the SEC are better than every other conference. But that's a year to year thing that you just sort of have to figure out as you go. Are they ever going to go to 9 games though? In your opinion? Because it feels like we're getting closer and closer. I've seen a couple reports this week.
Well, it's pretty simple. All it's going to take is some sort of concession from the College Football Playoff Selection Committee on a strength of schedule metric. I don't think it would take much for Greg Sankey to say, because I think Sankey wants it. I think Sankey personally wants to see the league go to 9 conference games because it's more money. You can sell season ticket packages a whole lot easier if there's an additional home game on there every other year. You can upsell your current media rights deal with ESPN and get a surplus on that because, hey, look, all of a sudden we've got so many more conference games in our inventory for you to televise. And so I think as a financial move, financial play, Sankey's down for it. But the coaches, the ADs, they like making bowl games. They like having low loss totals. The way to get around that is to have a verified strength of schedule metric. And they don't have that right now in the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. And so long as they're accepting teams into the 12-team field based on how many losses they have, the coaches and the ADs are going to favor a format that brings them less losses. And until the CFP adopts some sort of uniform strength of schedule metric, they're sticking at 8. I mean, that's just as simple as it is.
Yeah, and for me, I wonder if Greg Sankey has this in his mind. It would make all of those sort of excuses from the Big Ten null and void. You go to 9 games. It would just make things easier for the College Football Playoff format and the negotiations going back and forth with him and Tony Petitti.
Yeah, I would. You know what bothers me, though? Did you see this, Gabe? Indiana dropping Virginia. Dropping Virginia to schedule an FCS team in the future. Like, what in the world?
Oh, they play 9 conference games, though, David. It's totally acceptable.
That one was like, all right, come on, seriously? Like, you're undermining your conference by doing that.
Well,
like,
but
you just came off of a college football playoff appearance, and you're trying to duck Virginia? What is that?
In all fairness, though, like, just if the SEC were to go to 9 games, what do you think those out-of-conference games would look like, honestly? They've been getting us ready for that for a while. They'd play an FCS game and then two low, low, low division FBS schools. I don't know if they'd even reach into the Power Four. Or do they have a requirement? I'm not sure.
No, so, I mean, the question is that strength of schedule metric, like, really robust in the College Football Playoff selection criteria? Because if it is, hey, get that FCS team off your schedule, right? Because we see it in college basketball. You basically get penalized for winning a quad four game. You're Memphis, and you got to play a home game against Rice in February. Like, you don't only have to win that game. You got to win that game by 35 points to even get any sort of a boost in the net. But, like, that's just not what it is in college football. So there's no disincentive right now to play those crappy games. Well, like, you might well.
I hate to say it. Doesn't it kind of work the other way sometimes with some of these SEC schools? Ole Miss is very famous for this. They put up these crazy numbers, get the highest point differential. ESPN's S&P Plus loves them because they're just beating the hell out of bad teams at the early part of the season in the non-con.
Yeah.
That sort of swings the other way sometimes when it comes to metrics in college football.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying is, like, if we actually had a strength of schedule metric and, like, Ole Miss's win over Georgia was valued like a Memphis non-conference basketball victory in Maui was last year, then, like, you would see a higher appetite to schedule better games. But Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin are like, hold on now. We beat Georgia. As of last season, they had won 2 of the last 3 national titles. And, like, what did that get us? Now, the flip side of that is you lost to Kentucky. Like, I get that. But even in the grand scheme of things, you know, a loss to Kentucky is, what's that, a quad 2, quad 3, if we're talking college basketball?
Quad 3 last year.
So, like, Kentucky was horrible. But I don't know. Like, I think that's the sticking point with the SEC coaches and the ADs right now. It's like, okay, you want us to play a tougher schedule? Like, give us some incentive to do that. And outside of the money that you would get from playing better games, there's really not a whole lot of incentive. So until they get that fixed, yeah, it's going to be the way it is.
All right, now, final thing here. Tiger basketball took another hit. Nolan Smith is off to Tennessee State. Good for Nolan. Tough for the program. Yeah. Revolving door at the with the coaching staff continues. No familiar faces for Penny Hardaway. I mean, it's him from last year's team, really, including support staff. It's a wild offseason. It continues a wild offseason.
Is Mike Davis back?
I think so. Maybe. So maybe there's one familiar face.
I mean, yeah. I mean, still, I mean, yeah, I think Jermaine Johnson's hanging around. There's at least there's something. It's not what you want. Honestly, like, I know fascinated by this move for Nolan Smith. I mean, I get it. Like, you want to be a head coach. Like, that's what everybody kind of aspires to. He's young. That's a tough job, though. You're going to the Ohio Valley. Look, I looked at it the other day, Gabe. In the OVC, the only team that's opting out on revenue share is Tennessee State. Like, so
not
that's
good,
tough, man. He's going to the one team in the league that's opting out on revenue share. Like, so he must just really want to be a head coach, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what Penny does at this point in the calendar. Like, obviously, he has a deep, deep network of basketball connections. He can find somebody or promote from within to fill that vacancy on his staff. It's not ideal because I liked their staff last year. I thought they had a good mix of like young up and coming basketball minds. Mike Davis came in after being a head coach at Indiana, UAB, Detroit Mercy. And they lose a little bit of that with Nolan Smith moving on. But you know, I hope this goes great for Nolan Smith. I hope he goes to Tennessee State, gets 20 wins, and then gets a look because you know there was a point in time there where it wasn't obvious, it wasn't set in stone, at least on the outside, who was going to be the successor to Mike Krzyzewski.
Yep.
Right? And they ended up going with John Shire. Nolan Smith was a part of some of those same teams as John Shire and grew up in that same Duke family and Duke brotherhood as John Shire. He didn't get that job. He went to Louisville to be an assistant under Kenny Payne. Obviously, that didn't work out very well.
I think that's putting it lightly, dude. That was horrible.
If he had stayed at Memphis and they got back to the NCAA tournament, like I kind of felt like he could have been positioned for a better job, but I get it. You don't know how often these things are going to come around. If somebody calls you and says, hey, do you want to be a head coach of a Division I school? You know, it's hard to say no to that. So I get it.
Yeah, I think with him, he is young, relatable enough where he could still, even with the lack of revenue sharing and money, I think he could still find some talent. He's got enough connections, but obviously it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. If they're opting out of revenue share, that's going to be really hard for him to field a very, very competitive roster every year, but I wouldn't put it past him. But David, I appreciate it. Have a good weekend. We'll talk next week.
Okay, brother. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. He's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on ex-college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports. Now, it's a Friday, so know what you need to do. Get by your local liquor store and pick up a bottle of Old Dominic. I have a new spirit for you. Now, they have vodka, but they have launched a new premium vodka using pristine Memphis aquifer water, charcoal filtration, and a multi-step distillation process. Old Dominic Memphis Vodka delivers what the distillery calls an even cleaner, crisper version of the profile vodka drinkers desire. So you can get that vodka, get your hands on a bottle today, and test it out. I'm sure that you will like it, but they have, on top of vodka, gin, toddy, whiskey, bourbon, award-winning selections of that whiskey and that bourbon. So make sure that you go get a bottle of Old Dominic today because it is the most fresh, most full spirit you can buy in the city because the distillery is here. It's downtown on the riverfront. 305 South Front Street is where you can find them. They have events all the time. You can check them out at olddominic.com. They have music events coming up this weekend, next weekend, and the weekend after that. So take advantage. They always have specials at the bar. So if you're just having a night out on the town, stop by Old Dominic and go to the bar and enjoy a craft cocktail made by my good friends at Old Dominic. Old Dominic Distillery. Come say hi. More of the Gabe Kuhn Show is scheduled right after this break, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Quick update on the Open Championship at Royal Porch Rush. Scottie Scheffler at the top of the leaderboard right now. Matt Fitzpatrick right behind him. But Scottie Scheffler is 10 under after shooting a 7 under 64 today. He putted really well. He's fantastic. And what's interesting about this going into the weekend is if he is able to win the Open, he is still not 30. He is under the age of 30. There are three players that have won a Masters, a PGA Championship, and an Open Championship all before the age of 30. Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. That's the list. If Scottie Scheffler is able to put himself into that category, I think he's already an all-timer, but it further proves that, considering how much longer, seemingly, he has to play. But hell of a day from him. We'll see if he can carry that throughout the weekend. Now, I want to take this time to sort of hop around the NFL and get to some news and notes from there. We talked about the second-round picks yesterday, and, previously in all the years we have been going through the NFL draft and signing second-round picks, guaranteed money, fully guaranteed contracts has not been a thing. But as of today, with the sort of omission of Quinshon Judkins as he goes through all of his legal issues that we learned about over this past weekend, it looks like the seven of the top eight picks in the second round will have fully guaranteed contracts. Seven of the top eight. Now, I view this as players and agents trying to take back some power and, you know, take care of their guys, take care of themselves. You never know if you're going to get to a second contract. Football is a very, very tough game. But this is a complete escape from what we have done since we've played NFL football. Good for those second-round picks. We'll see how many of them ultimately end up with those fully guaranteed figures in the second round. But it took a while to get to this point. 2 days ago, only two second-round picks had actually signed, and that has sped up. That has sped up. Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams has retired after eight seasons. He has just really struggled since leaving the Chargers the first time around. He had the ACL injury, and then now he had an undisclosed injury that ultimately led him to retirement. The Chargers wide receiver room I thought was going to be slightly better with him in there, getting back with Justin Herbert where he had a 1,000-yard season, adding with Ladd McConkey, guys like that. Trey Harris just signed from Ole Miss. So I thought it was going to be better. Taking Mike Williams, the vet, out of that room makes me feel a little bit differently. But, you know, the Chargers have completely sort of changed around their scheme and their thought process in regards to how they're going to run their offense. I know Justin Herbert's a highly paid quarterback, but he's more of a, you know, they've turned him into more of a game manager, if you will. They want to run big sets. They want to run the ball, do things like that. But Mike Williams, I thought it was a good eight-year career for him.
Yeah, right. It was a good one. It was a good one. Just you, like you said, his body just eventually failed him toward the end. And since he left the Chargers, he was never really the same. And it's just it's unfortunate to see because when he was healthy, he was one of the better guys in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, jump ball threat, deep ball guy. He was really really good. Now also on the wide receiver front, we talked about it earlier in the week. Juwan Jennings, wide receiver for the 49ers. He was their leading receiving yards guy last year with right around 900 yards. I think somewhere around eight touchdowns, 77 receptions. He wants a new deal because he's not making a whole lot and he produced at a very high level. But we're getting all of the designations going into training camp for physically unable to perform, who's going to be on the roster to start the year, who's healthy enough to play, who's not healthy enough to play. For the 49ers, starting on the physically unable to perform list, you have Ricky Pearsall and you have Brandon Ayuk, both on the physically unable to perform list. So we'll see if they can get back before the preseason. But Juwan Jennings' case seems to have gotten a whole lot better to get a deal, and I don't think he's asking for all that much. But again, the 49ers are in this situation where they're very, very close to hitting their salary cap. They have to be very careful about who they're giving money to, especially with the Brock Purdy extension that was signed this offseason.
I do wonder. I understand that you never want your teammates to be injured or see them on a list like that. But when that information came out, I think he gave a little fist pump, maybe just a small one. Maybe just like, oh, that's going to get me. That might get me an extra mil right there.
Yeah, I would say that his agent probably picked up the phone and called John Lynch as soon as he saw those designations. But the 49ers, what are they? Can I ask you this? What are they going to be this year? It's 6-11 last year. All the injuries obviously were the biggest reason. But like what can I expect from that team? The Rams have come along. The Seahawks, I think, with Sam Darnold could be a threat. We'll see what he looks like. They have a good wide receiver core, good offensive line. Defense has gotten better. One of the best secondaries in the league right this second. Like, the 49ers, there was this expectation that they're going to break through and potentially win a Super Bowl 2 years ago. Like, that was the expectation. They're going to be around for a little bit of time. They still had Brock Purdy on a cost-controlled contract. That's now done. He's now got $53 million per year. They still have a semblance of what their roster looked like, although no Debo Samuel anymore. George Kittle's getting older. He's not been able to stay on the field at the same rate. Ayuk's coming off the ACL. Like, they are one of the biggest mysteries to me in the National Football League.
I think the issue the 49ers are up against is I think that in the NFC, it's probably going to take about 10 wins to make it to the playoffs. Are they going to be able to go from 6 to 10 just if they are healthy when they already have so many question marks around their health? You already don't have Deebo Samuel there. So I expect them to be better than they were last season, but can they hit 10 games? And you have to hope that the Rams and the Seahawks take a step back, and I just don't think I expect
that. I expect the Rams to take a step forward.
Yeah, I expect the Rams to take a step forward. I think the Seahawks might be about the same.
We'll see.
So it's they're in just kind of that tough spot where they'll be better. That, you know, I don't think that they're going to be in last place in the NFC West like they were last season, but I don't know if they're going to have enough to make it to the playoffs.
And if we're being honest, that division is just underrated in general. We always talk about the AFC North or the NFC East.
Like, if they were the NFC South, I'd be like, yeah.
Sure, of course. But no doubt. But they're not.
Yeah.
Even the Arizona Cardinals have a little bit of, you know.
Moxie.
Yeah. And Kyler Murray, he hasn't won anything of consequence, but he's a damn good quarterback. Highly paid quarterback. Like, they have been tough. They've been a tough out the last couple of years, even though they're not a very good team.
It's just that NFC North eats up so many playoff spots. So many. And, I kind of expect them to
and
be
are
the
Bears
same.
Gonna
and are the Bears going to be
gonna
better?
Are they going to come along this year?
Yeah, I think that they're... I think that they're going to be better. No doubt about it. They'll be better than 6-11.
As long as they have guys on the field, they'll be better. But, like, how much better? If you told me Brandon Ayuk played the entire season last year, how many more games do they win than 6? That's a good question.
Let me ask you this. Because last year, one of the big issues with them was their defense. The defense was not great. But now they brought back Robert Saleh. Is he enough to improve that defense to a level where they could win 10 games?
There's familiarity, sure. But they've lost a couple guys.
Yeah, it's a personnel issue.
Javon Kinlaw,
like
Kinlaw's
you brought
out.
Up that Super Bowl team that they had. It's just not the same team.
No,
and
it's
you're
not.
Now paying Brock Purdy a lot of money.
I think they're one of the biggest mysteries.
It feels
in
like
the NFL.
It feels like the window for a true contention for them has probably closed.
Sure, but I feel like just looking at the sum of their parts, and the roster is still pretty solid.
Right.
And I believe in Kyle Shanahan as a coach. Robert Saleh coming into DC. I feel like the differential between their peak and their low going into next season is probably one of the biggest differentials in the entire NFL. I would not be surprised if they won 7 games. I wouldn't be surprised if they won 12.
I think that they're going to win 9 or 10. The question is, will it be enough to get them into the playoffs? Because I think the Rams are going to win the division. I think they could be as good as the Seahawks or better, but the question is, like, do the Bears get better? Are the Vikings and the Packers going to eat up those spots in the NFC North? Because you know that Detroit's probably going to win that. That's the issue.
Don't be so quick with Detroit.
You think Detroit might take a step back?
Great, great roster, and, like, the Vikings seemingly could take a step back. J.J. McCarthy now instead of Sam Darnold. You don't know what he's going to look like in his first year. The Bears are still a wild card. It looks like they have all the pieces to compete, but will they actually break through with Ben Johnson in his first year as a head coach? The only thing I have with the Lions, they lost nearly their entire coaching staff outside of Dan Campbell. They lost OC, DC, running backs coach, quarterbacks coach,
sure,
all this offseason.
True.
Now, I'm not taking away anything from their talent. They have a bunch of talent. One of the best rosters in the NFL, but that much staff turnover with all of that good culture built up, that's a challenge. I think they are the best team in the NFC North, but I don't know if it's completely open and shut.
Either way.
That they are going to be what they were last year.
I think that it's fair to expect, the Lions, the Vikings, and the Packers to probably be in the playoffs. Is that a fair expectation?
Vikings is the only one I'm having.
Because of JJ?
Lions and Packers, sure. Vikings, I don't know. I don't know.
Their defense is so good, though.
No, it
the
is.
Defense is
it's solid. And Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, their GM's done a really good job, because you thought a couple of years ago when they got rid of Danielle Hunter, like it was going to – they just got rid of sold off a bunch of defensive pieces because they wanted to get better in a better salary cap space. And he's done a really good job of operating. But
like,
it's just –
Let me ask you this. Who has a better season, the Bears or the 49ers? It might come down to that. Because Philly and Washington are going to be in. Detroit and the Packers probably in. I still think the Vikings are going to be in. Tampa probably going to be in again unless, you know, the Falcons maybe, if Michael Penix works out.
The Bears
are just
49ers.
Where are the spots? Where that, like, the question for me is, like, where's that open spot in the playoffs that the 49ers could slide into? I don't know if it's there. Because the teams that were in the playoffs last year, I think, will probably be back. And then you have Atlanta right there. You've got the Bears that might be able to improve. Could Dallas make a run and make it back into the playoffs? It's just of the teams that I think have a chance to make that leap, I don't know if I'm the most confident in the 49ers.
Yeah. Bears are, that's a tough question. Completely different.
It's like
situations.
Seattle did make it last year and they won 10 games.
I think they could be sneaky too this year. Really good secondary.
The
NFC's really
interesting.
Good defense.
It's really interesting.
And I know people are like, yo, you brought in Sam Darnold and let go of Geno Smith. I think Sam Darnold sort of fits what they want to do.
Sam
a
Darnold
bit
won
better.
14 games last year.
He was in the MVP race, for God's sake.
You never fully believed in it, but he was there.
I never did. And I'm glad I didn't because you saw the first round of the playoffs.
We did.
And we did. The wild card round, that didn't turn out.
I like the 49ers. I root for them. You know, they're a fun team, but I worry about their health. And trying to jump from 6 to 10 is a big thing in the NFL in terms of wins.
And I'm not convinced.
And on top of it, is 10 going to be enough to get you in?
And with respect to Niners fans.
It'll be a better season, though.
And Kyle Shanahan,
it'll be a better season.
I'm not sure that, like, that jump of four games is strictly health. I think they just played pretty miserably last year, and I think people have figured out Brock Purdy to a certain extent.
I mean, their defense was way worse than the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Which is a tough scene.
Yeah, for sure. All right, now small talk is on the way. We'll wrap up hour number two when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And small talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, it's day two of us following along with the drama that came from a Coldplay concert on Wednesday. Astronomer CEO Andy Byron and his head of HR, Kristen Cabot, of course, were caught on the kiss cam. They ducked away and clearly are having an affair. Now, Astronomer has put out an official statement regarding their CEO, Andy Byron. There were some fake, statements yesterday that were put out on behalf of Andy Byron. Just want to make sure, you know, everyone knows this one is from Astronomer. Astronomer is committed to the values and culture that have guided us since our founding. Our leaders are expected to set the standard in both conduct and accountability. The board of directors has initiated a formal investigation into this matter. We will have additional details to share very shortly. And then I guess there was supposed to be an HR staff member that was seen on camera that people were sort of speculating about. Her name was Alyssa Stoddard. They put this at the end to sort of put the kibosh on that. Alyssa Stoddard was not at the event and no other employees were in the video. Andy Byron has not put out any statement. Reports saying otherwise are all incorrect. And the latest update in regards to their employment status is that Andy Byron and Kristen Cabot have both been put on leave by Astronomer. I still stand by this, Connor. Still stand by this. If they would have just not ducked out of the way of the kiss cam, if they would have just kissed, we're probably not talking about this story because no one knew who Andy Byron or Kristen Cabot was before they ducked out of the way and Chris Martin, lead man for Coldplay, said they're either having an affair or they're just shy. That's what he said directly after they ducked out of the kiss cam. If they would have just owned it, I don't think we're talking about this the past 2 days.
I tend to agree. Also, maybe during a kiss cam, don't be holding the person you're having an affair with next to...
out in the open?
Out in the open, next to glass. Maybe don't do that. Also, maybe just don't have an affair.
Yeah, and do you think they're actually going to give us like the full details of the investigation?
Probably.
It's a private company.
Yeah.
Like they say we're going to tell you. No, you're not. You're not going to release details. We know. I don't even need an investigation.
We'll find out in the Netflix show.
I think you need a little bit more to initiate a Netflix docuseries, right? And maybe there is more.
Do you?
Maybe not. Maybe not. Those things, they pop those things out quick, though, these days. Very fast. It'll be on max by next week. All right. Now, hour number three is on the way. We'll open it as we normally do on a Friday with Parker Fleming. We'll talk some Grizzlies and some NBA on the other side right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.